Chapter 87. Blood on the Steel. Freddy sat side on, twisting towards us. "Good afternoon," Sidney Grice called out cheerily as George Pound followed him in, with me close on their heels. "I do not suppose that you ever thought you would be pleased to see me, Miss Wilde."
"Oh, thank God!"
Her wrists had been tied with blue wool to the arms of her cherrywood chair.
"God must be at the very pinnacle of fashion from the number of times he has been invoked this day,"
Sidney Grice chatted as he turned his back on her.
"Freddy!"
I hurried over.
"Leave her!"
I spun round to see that the voice came from the bootmaker. He was standing behind Lucy, who was also in her chair, manacled to it with red wool, a knife held under her chin.
"I have been looking for you," I told him.
"That repair you did was hopeless."
I went towards him. "Listen, you can hear the nails scratching the floor."
"It has done reparable damage to my Hampshire oak floor,"
my godfather confirmed.
"Stop right there,"
the bootmaker commanded.
"Now go and stand by the ugly sow."
"There is only one pig in this room," I told him.
"Not so close," he said,
and I moved a couple of feet away.
"You, the famous Mr. Grice, point that gun towards your friend in the flashy suit. Lower the hammer gently. Now put it on the floor."
"Don't do it," Pound urged. "You can put a bullet in his brain before he can move a muscle."
"Had your eyes checked recently?" the bootmaker asked mockingly, and put the tip of his knife to a silver line on Lucy's throat.
"Cheese wire," I realized.
There was a loop of it round Lucy's neck, and the bootmaker held up a length behind her.
"The other end is tied through my belt," he explained, with great satisfaction. "So, if I should fall over, it will slice her head off like a ball of cheddar. Put the gun down."
"Please, do as he asks,"
Lucy trembled, and Sidney Grice obeyed. "Now," the bootmaker smirked with milky coffee lips.
"Kick it towards me." "This is most embarrassing."
Mr. G took off his Ulster overcoat and put it, folded, onto the occasional table beside him.
"For I am forced to admit that I am hopeless at kicking, and I always have been. I was never selected to play in any games at school." "Just do it." "Very well."
My guardian placed his soft-brimmed hat on top, rubbed his hands, leaned heavily on his cane, swung his right foot back and let fly. The revolver rose a few inches, clattered down and shot across the floor to stop at the side of Lucy's chair.
"Actually, that was not bad, was it?"
Mr. G tossed his head proudly.
"Well done, you," Pound said tersely. "I suppose you couldn't have accidentally put it out of reach."
"I do not have accidents, Inspector."
Mr. G expanded his chest and flexed his shoulders like a weightlifter warming up for a new challenge.
"You should have known that by now." "And now that silly satchel."
The bootmaker stroked Lucy's cheek with his free hand, and she shrank back.
"This is chrome-tanned Highland doeskin," Mr. G retorted indignantly, but skimmed it over to stop just by the bootmaker's feet.
"Help me,"
Lucy beseeched, and her captor grinned. He had good teeth, I noticed, regular and clean.
"I am the only one worth begging, darling."
He combed his fingers through her hair, lifting it back to show her scarred brow.
"What do you want?"
George asked.
"That is for me to know."
"If you were going to kill him, you could have done it well before now."
"And spoil the fun?"
the bootmaker grinned.
"Who are you, anyway?" "I am Chief Inspector Pound of the Metropolitan Police, and I must warn you..." "No, you must not,"
the bootmaker shouted.
"The only thing you must do, officer, is to keep quiet and do as I say."
"Those are two things,"
Sidney Grice pointed out.
"And you can shut your soapy mouth too."
He pulled the knife back, forcing Lucy's chin up, and she gasped. It was a terrible-looking instrument, a good 8 inches long, similar to those that the Knacker's men used to dispatch horses in the street, and there was blood already on the steel.
"You speak very well," I commented.
"When I choose to,"
he agreed.
"For a man who has spent some time in Uckfield," Mr. G observed.
"I told you to shut your mouth,"
the bootmaker snapped.
"You told me that I could, not that I should,"
Sidney Grice differed.
"Well, shut it then."
But curiosity was already getting the better of the man.
"How did you know that?"
"I made many studies of accents," Sidney Grice smiled modestly, "and the dialect in the southwestern quadrant of High Weald is unpleasant but quite distinct. However, you were not raised there. You did not, exempli gratia, pronounce only as Oney, which those indigenous to that area of Sussex never quite managed to mask. I must confess, however, that I am struggling to isolate all the ingredients of your speech."
"You are too damned clever for my liking," the bootmaker snarled.
"I cannot deny it," Mr. G raised his cane. "Would you like me to transmit this to you too?"
"Well now,"
the bootmaker allowed Lucy's head to drop a fraction.
"Why would you be offering that?"
He toyed absently with a bow at the front of Lucy's dress.
"I have read about your trick canes."
He tugged the button open.
"How do I know it is not one of those dynamite walking sticks you had in the Red-Handed League?"
That adventure was a Fleet Street fantasy by one of the many journalists who Sidney Grice was taking to court.
"You may also have read that I never tell a lie,"
Sidney Grice told him,
"and you have my word that it is not." "He is infuriatingly truthful,"
George affirmed. He had edged perhaps 6 inches along the wall, but was standing bolt upright.
"Hold it up."
Mr. G did so with the flourish of a drum major. Most of his sticks had globe tops, but this had a handle at a right angle to the shaft.
"What does the catch on the side do?"
The bootmaker squinted.
"Show me."
Sidney Grice pressed it, and the top of the handle sprang open to reveal a brass lever, with each end rounded into a disc.
"What the hell did you bring that for?"
Pound demanded furiously.
"Honestly, Grice, I know you have a reputation for eccentricity to live up to, but a Morse code key? When exactly were you planning on using it?"
"Mr. Grice to you, Pound."
"Chief Inspector Pound to you, Mr. Grice."
"Stop it, both of you," I scolded. "Mr. Grice often has trouble finding a telegram office," I explained. "He can connect this to any convenient telegraph wire and send his own message."
"Which is a criminal offence," Pound pointed out in disgust, "and that's on top of illegal entry."
"I shall not press charges," Lucy promised.
"Would you rather I had brought my musical cane, or the one with the built-in periscope?"
Mr. G queried.
"As this gentleman implied, a weapon might have been a good idea,"
Pound groaned despairingly.
"A sword stick, for example." "It's a long time since a policeman called me that."
The bootmaker looked slightly mollified.
"I had my revolver,"
my guardian protested,
"and I saw no reason to bring a bomb." "Point it towards your girl and let me see your thumb."
The bootmaker screwed up his eyes.
"Now push the lever."
My guardian was expressionless as he complied. Nothing happened.
"I still don't trust you,"
the man pondered.
"It could be on a timer."
"Shall I take it outside?" I offered.
"Place it on the table pointing at your girl,"
the bootmaker decided.
"But if I hear so much as a click..."
He brandished the knife and Lucy cried,
"No, please!"
"I like it when they beg," he smiled grimly. "So what have you got in your sack, girl?"
"Shall I show you?"
I went to the table, unclipped my handbag, and brought out the wad of seat stuffing.
"What's that? Your spare wig?"
the bootmaker guffawed.
"No, that is at the laundry."
I put it down beside Sidney Grice's cane. My gin flask and cigarette case followed, handkerchief, notebook and pencil, bottle of sal volatile, Palmer violets, perfumes, my purse. When I had constructed a small mountain, I held my bag upside down and gave it a shake.
"Happy?"
The bootmaker laughed.
"You are worse than my..."
"Mother,"
I suggested, and his face stiffened.
"Just put it all away." "In The Golden Dragon, you called your captor a fool, Miss Bocking,"
Sidney Grice declared. Perhaps you would like to explain why.
The bootmaker laughed. Not the jolly chuckle he had used in the square, but two sharp yips like an excited puppy.
That is an excellent idea, Miss Snout-in-the-Air Bocking, he sneered. Tell them.
Lucy's head went back and she exhaled through her mouth.
Tell them.
The bootmaker raised his right elbow.
All right.
Lucy gasped, and I could hardly hear her words, much less believe them.
Because I arranged to have Freddy assaulted.